and welcome to a weekly edition of Popcorn Optional, a movie podcast where we talk all things movies. We are here tonight with episode 43, A Wrinkle in Time, directed by Ava DuVernay, the new Disney film starring Storm Reid, Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, Mindy Kaling, Chris Pine, so many great people. We also have a couple of news items, a segment of honorable mentions. We got all sorts of fun stuff for you guys tonight, so let's get into it. My name's Cameron Slanina, and tonight I'm joined by my co-hosts Jake Brown and Trevor Allison. Hey, guys.
What's up?
Hello.
Let's go ahead and get to news, because there are a couple of pieces that we need to talk about. South by Southwest is going on right now, and A Quiet Place and Ready Player One have both gotten very positive reactions, with A Quiet Place currently being the buzzed about film that everybody is talking about. And there have been some people that have thrown out the word it is this year's Get Out.
Whoa.
Which seems awfully bold to say, considering how
only
beloved white. Get Out is.
I was going to say, because there's only white people in it.
Yes. Catherine Keener and Bradley Whitford make an appearance.
They probably meant more like big, like, success indie horror film.
I think that's more of what they mean.
I'll take
not
that.
Like the cultural relevance.
Yeah.
But I think they more mean like, hey, this is a sci-fi genre film that is big from somebody that you wouldn't expect, such as John Krasinski directing, because let's face it, he's directed two movies so far and none of us have seen them.
I'm still scared to see that. I'm not looking forward to it when we review it in a few weeks.
So, oh.
I would, Trevor, are you going to be sick that weekend? Do you think that you're going to be
no,
sick?
No, I will. I'll see it. This podcast has already opened my horizons. You know, last year I saw It Comes at Night and I saw It and I liked it, actually. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe
I would venture
maybe
that
someday,
It Comes at Night, though, is like a not necessarily a horror film.
The thing is that you don't know that while you're watching it.
That's true. That's very true. Kristen Wiig has been cast as Cheetah in Wonder Woman, who is Wonder Woman's biggest adversary in the comics, from what I understand from the limited research that I've done. What do you guys think of Kristen Wiig being cast in this? Is this like a Heath Ledger type move, or is this a, oh gosh, why are they doing this?
I think like comedians, the best comedians generally are also really good dramatic actors when given the right role and the right director and the right opportunity. And so I think Kristen Wiig is a fantastic actress. She's done a lot of really good stuff in the indie scene. So I'm excited to see what she does to this. I think also Wonder Woman is a fun franchise. So far it's the only glimmer of light and hope in the DC universe. And so, you know, maybe she'll bring a little humor to the character. Maybe she'll be like, don't make me dance, like, or don't make me sing the whole time she's on screen. You know, that could be entertaining, but I'm down.
So in my limited reading of the Wonder Woman world, I recently have been reading a little bit of it. Cheetah is a sort of interesting character, and I think from what I've read, at least, it seems like she's a decent fit for it. I would be worried if it was not Patty Jenkins, but I think that as you were saying, Jake, I think that she is the right director and the right person for this character. I think that all these things together are good. I'm pleased by this and intrigued.
Yeah, I feel like Patty Jenkins has bought herself quite a bit of good luck with her repertoire of videos and TV that she's done so far. And it's one of those decisions where I really feel like it could be a Heath Ledger esque choice, in that, and I don't mean to the quality maybe of Heath Ledger, but when Nolan cast Heath Ledger in the sequel to a very successful DC superhero film, everybody was like, he's not going to fit in that universe. That's a weird choice. He's not going to work. And then we saw it and it was like, I can't imagine anybody else playing that role. And I feel like this is going to be fairly similar, where Kristen Wiig is going to bring something to that role that nobody else would be able to do. And we'll all be like, okay, Patty Jenkins, we fully trust you now. And then, you know, 10 years from now, Patty Jenkins directs a war film, intercutting three different storylines. And we're all like, oh, wow, Patty Jenkins.
That's the thing, is it's like the last thing we should be complaining about is the casting in the DC universe. Like, everybody's right. Been really well casted. And like, this is Warner Brothers and DC. The amount of money they're putting into these things is ridiculous. And like, casting directors, they are very talented
like career path profession in Hollywood. Like these, it's not like someone's just like, you know what? Kristen Wiig. Like, no, this is, there's a process to this.
So that's how they cast animated films made by people who are not Pixar or Disney.
Exactly.
To be fair, she has had some not so comedic roles. She's had roles that deal with drama. She was in The Skeleton Twins with Bill Hader, which is like a dark comedy, but also has some very dark elements. She was in The Martian. She was in Mother. I mean, she has had some roles that are a little bit more serious to kind of maybe give you that serious feel that I think people are wanting out of a superhero villain.
And she's kind of, in Bridesmaids, she's kind of the straight man too. She's not like
right.
super yeah. crazy and funny like everyone else.
Right. And she's incredibly talented.
Oh.
She deserves...
Love me some Kristen Wiig.
Yep.
She's like,
I mean, her
SNL Mount Rushmore for me.
Yes. Definitely. Especially if you just look out of... I think if you do Mount Rushmore out of like 2000s on, I think she's definitely on the board. She's in MacGruber, which, you know, is something to be said.
That's all you need to know.
That's all you need to know. And we'll go from there. Favreau, John Favreau, that being Favreau. John Favreau, the director, not John Favreau, the political analyst, is writing and directing a live-action Star Wars TV series for Disney streaming. And there's been a lot of outrage around this. I feel like Jon Favreau is catching the flack of a tail end of people being upset with Disney for, everybody that they've signed on so far to be a writer or director in their universe so far has pretty much been a white male. And people are upset about Favreau just being another white male. So I don't feel like it's necessarily directed at Favreau, but more of just a Disney, Lucasfilm, what are you kind of doing? Which is interesting when you think that Kathleen Kennedy is the one that runs the show. So, what was your guys' initial reaction when you heard that Jon Favreau was writing and directing the Star Wars TV series for the streaming service?
Jon Favreau is one of the best storytellers in Hollywood right now. He's also like one of the most consistent and safe bets, which like I understand why people want new voices in Star Wars and like I would love to see Ryan Coogler or someone like that take a Star Wars film, but you also have to acknowledge like these are billion-dollar franchises and Disney isn't going to hand the reins of like the fourth or fifth Star Wars project since they bought Lucasfilm to like an untested person that hasn't managed a project of that scale. And that's just the way that Hollywood is right now. Like we are in the middle of this shift, but like you need experience dealing with big budgets in the studio system to be able to handle something like this. I think that's one of the reasons that Lord and Miller got fired from Solo is because like as talented as they are, when you're dealing with something like Disney and Star Wars, it's a totally different ball game. And so Jon Favreau right. like knows those waters like nobody else. And I think he's also shown consistently that like, even though he is a straight white guy in Hollywood, like he does an incredible job of like writing to different characters, writing to different cultures, like being a storyteller in the truest sense and like being empathetic and taking in the characters and the people and the audience and delivering like a very entertaining piece of content. I hope that in the future, like we do get fresh voices of different genders and races and sexualities, like telling stories in Star Wars, because Star Wars is a universe that allows all those opportunities. But you have to understand that there's like literally billions of dollars on the line. So they're not going to give it to somebody who's not tested.
And Disney has already somewhat been testing the waters with their directors. I mean, they hired Gareth Edwards, and as great as Rogue One is, that wasn't the smoothest process. The behind the scenes is kind of troubled in that during the reshoots, Gareth kind of had the project taken away from him and was stuck in the editing bay, and somebody else came in and directed the actual reshoots. And then we know about Lord and Miller, and Rian Johnson was a risk as well, and depending on who you ask, that was a great decision or a bad decision. I think Lucasfilm looks at Rian Johnson as a success, but that's a one out of three so far that they've, out of the four films they've put out so far, or that they were about to put out, there's been problems with two of the directors, you know, or two sets of the directors. So I think they're looking as safe as possible. They put Ron Howard on Solo, which is like, hey, if you want a decent film, Ron Howard. And they, Jon Favreau's a talented guy. I mean, he's kind of riding this high off of Chef and Jungle Book, and then he's going to be doing Lion King, and so he knows how to work within the Disney big studio system, and now he's going to do Star Wars.
I hope he also casts himself in a bit role.
He's in, what is he in? He's in, he's a voice actor in Solo, I think.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think he has a small, like, voice. Yeah, he's a voice of Rio Durant in Solo.
I love him as Happy Hogan in the Marvel movies. He's so great.
Yeah.
I love that he stayed on after he kind of left the directing chair. Like, that kind of, I think that shows, like, the quality of, or, like, the character of him is, like, somebody else came in and directed the third movie, but he stayed on, still as somewhat, like, a decent-sized role as Happy Hogan.
Also, that role is, like, fun as hell, though, because it's, like, not stressful at all, and you get to show up in all these Marvel movies.
Yeah, I mean, he understands, like, every aspect of production. He was a character actor, he's a director, he's done stuff like Jungle Book, which is hugely CGI heavy, but he's also done stuff like Chef, which is like really small, intimate, character study, indie film of just dialogue and drama and character development. Like, this is a great choice, and I mean, like I said, yes, we want more diversity, but you have to acknowledge that this is an incredibly talented filmmaker, and Disney is a business. And, you know, maybe in like 3 or 4 more Star Wars spinoffs, they will go to someone who hasn't been tested. But this is the first Star Wars TV show ever. Like,
that is pretty much going to launch their streaming service.
Yeah, they're going to go with someone they trust. So you can't fault them for that. I don't know.
Yeah, I think that expecting anything other than this is pretty optimistic. Not very realistic. But you guys have talked me into Jon Favreau being the best possible choice, actually. So, kudos to Disney.
Yeah, I'm all on board for Jon Favreau. I mean, when you look at the options available, I think he's a very... While he may not be, like, the most exciting choice, he's a very safe and logical choice.
Oh, yeah.
And I mean, we only... I mean, I don't want to, like, stick on Star Wars too long like we always do, but... There's a certain percentage of this that kind of tells itself, and you just have to kind of guide it a little bit.
And yeah.
And I think that Rian Johnson did a great job of that, and I think Jon Favreau can do that.
All right. Let's move on to the Obamas developing content at Netflix. What do you guys think about this? Is this a smart move, or is this a... This may be an iffy situation.
Wait. I just want to say real quick before we get into this, I want Netflix to use my money to buy TV shows and movies and not make their own all the time, always. we're about a year and a half from flooded original content everywhere from me, maybe less than that, from me dropping Netflix altogether.
Well, you know that, like, they've come out and said, like, their goal is to have, like, only their content on there.
Yeah, I know. And then they basically invented TBS. Like, I don't understand. Like, what's... Like, it doesn't make any sense. Now, end of rant. The Obama's doing stuff here. That's super interesting. I don't even know, like, what kind of... Is this like a talk show? Is this like a Last Week Tonight hosted by Barack Obama? Because I am here for that. I am 100% on that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what this is or if it's real, but, like, I'm interested.
It seems like from the stories that I've read and like the what's been put out, it's that there's no like defined media that they'll be putting out. It's more like Netflix is almost buying a first look option with them, where they have the option to buy and produce whatever they come up with creatively. The quote that I keep reading is, "The Obamas have always believed in the power of storytelling to inspire throughout their lives. They have lifted up stories of people whose efforts to make a difference are quietly changing the world for the better. As they consider their future personal plans, they continue to explore new ways to help others tell and share their stories," which is from Eric Schultz's story in the New York Times. So, I mean, we'll see.
Keep getting those checks, man. Like, yeah, why not?
Gotta make that money. MoviePass is tracking all of us. Or are they? Or are they not? Are they joking about it? Are they serious about it? Who knows what's actually going on? But if MoviePass was tracking your every move and selling that data, would you guys drop MoviePass?
Listen,
who cares?
MoviePass is definitely tracking our every move and selling that data. Otherwise, their business model would be sunk.
And like, there's, I don't care if MoviePass knows that I go to work and I go home and like I go to the movies sometimes.
Especially if they're trying to glean like information from my pre and post activities of going to the movie theater. Like if they're trying to, I don't know, partner with Applebee's to get me to go to Applebee's and then go to the theater. Like if they're looking at that, they're going to find out that 90% of the time I'm at home, I go to the movie theater, and then I come back home. And that's like the exact pattern. So
also, I don't care how much money MoviePass spends or how much money Applebee's spends with MoviePass. I'm not going to Applebee's. Like, I don't care what the ad campaign is. It's just not going
to
happen.
There's literally no marketing that could take me to Applebee's. Like, literally none.
What if they're giving away free food?
Okay, if Applebee's is sponsoring popcorn optional, I will eat there. That's the only way.
The funniest thing about all of this to me is, one, the people that freak out about it, acting like this wasn't something that was already assumed, and two, who is buying the data that says that I go to the movie theater and go back, and what are they doing with that? Like, I'm curious who MoviePass is selling this to, going, hey, you really want to know what this guy's doing. He goes to Chick-fil-A every once in a while, and in the mornings sometimes too. You're going to want to see this location data.
And, like, let's be real. Google Maps has been tracking us for years. Like, if you have a smartphone, you're being tracked. And if MoviePass wants to do that too, and I get movies basically for free, like, sure.
Yeah.
I don't care.
I feel like I'm you know, I'm essentially like, you're sort of getting paid to tell them where you go, and they're paying you in movies.
But we also don't have to tell them where we go. We just have to let them have act like we're not even like filling out like a, well, today I went to, it's like, this is like, just take the information off my phone, do it for me, and give me all the free movies that I want.
Amen.
And we're good. And that's that. Now, did you guys have the Grinch trailer play in front of your screening of A Wrinkle in Time?
I did.
It did not play for me. I did see Christopher Robin, which is something that I could talk about for a long time. But
well, which one do we want to talk first? Do you want to talk Christopher Robin, or do we want to talk the Grinch? Because we can talk both real quick.
Let's talk Grinch. You start. I did, after you sent me the link, I watched it. And so my thought of this is, we're going to get one of these every 20 years, aren't we? Just Grinch.
For sure.
Every 20 years, same story. Here's what animation is like. We tried the live action one time. It didn't work. So we're going to stick with...
The live action worked very well. That was the highest grossing film that year.
Are you serious?
I'm 100% serious. The Jim Carrey Grinch?
Yeah, that movie's awful.
That was the highest grossing film of whatever year that was that it came out, 2000. That was, if not the highest, it was one of the highest.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
That was when everybody loved Jim Carrey, though. That was that time period.
Yep.
Anyway, yeah.
What do you mean that period? Do people not like Jim Carrey anymore?
Well, he's an anti-vaxxer, so I think that's really dampened him a little bit. anyway, yeah. So, yeah. You guys can, like, what is, why does this exist? I'm like, it's ridiculous.
I mean, it's going to print money. Like, the kids in my theater were loving it. The adults in my theater were loving it.
Also, let's talk about how the Illumination tag at the beginning of this is like 8 seconds long and includes a minion speaking a line. Like, we've really gone off the deep end here.
Yep. In 2000, The Grinch was the highest grossing movie at $260 million.
Wow.
I don't know what to say.
I think I'm more weirded out by why Benedict Cumberbatch is voicing this.
Get those checks, man. Voice work is easy.
Also,
is he becoming a dad soon or something? And like, I want to put out a film for my son to have.
If anyone was going to play a live action Grinch, it's him. So I guess, I mean, maybe we'll get a little like him doing Smog kind of thing where he's, you know, doing the full Grinch in the voice studio.
Also, content of the week recommend, if you haven't watched Benedict Cumberbatch on the ground in a CGI suit playing Smaug, then please go do that.
he's brilliant.
It actually kind of is, like, you laugh at it and then you're like, wow, what this guy's willing to do. Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is one of those movies that's like, I'm curious what this will, if this will add anything to the story, or if this is simply just a money grab that will be a exact replica of what happened 18 years ago in 2000. And they're like, look, that worked. How can we make it different and make a new one? Animated. Perfect. Let's do it. Let's go.
Okay, you can't put a new spin on this story. It's
yeah.
Well,
I don't understand.
I mean, I don't mean like add something to it in a new spin. I mean like visually or like joke wise. Let's make, because there are still things from the Grinch that like I feel like around Christmas get quoted around my family's household, and so maybe it's like there's a new joke, there's a new like visually. I mean, it definitely looks different than the Grinch that was, at least even from like a, how his lair is set up, how the town is set up. There's some new things that they're doing. Whether or not it's warranted and needed is a whole different subject. But okay, Trevor, go ahead and talk to us about Christopher Robin.
So I think the trailer is just kind of like a little teaser. And So apparently Christopher Robin is all grown up now. Is working for the man, has sold out, so much so that he sends his family on vacation without him, and he's all depressed on a park bench, and then Pooh Bear shows up. So if you guys didn't see it, that's basically the gist of it. Ewan McGregor is the adult Christopher Robin. So my background is Pooh was my favorite when I was a kid. Loved the Many Adventures of Winnie the Pooh, the books, the television show, the feature length films. I loved it. It's great. It's fun. But this is weird. Are we going to get a movie of Ewan McGregor playing Christopher Robin hallucinating about all of his friends from the 100 Acre Wood for an hour and a half? I just don't
know. I think this is straight up like Hook, but for Winnie the Pooh.
And I mean, maybe it will be as good as Hook. It has a great cast. It's directed by Mark Forster, who's not awful. So, I mean, I don't know.
Trevor, don't say that. That's offensive.
Wait, you think Mark Forster is awful? Is that what you're saying?
Do you think Mark Forster is good? Name me a good film that Mark Forster has directed.
Quantum of Solace is fine.
Oh! I vomit. I vomit openly.
It's the worst of the Daniel Craig Bonds, but those are all really great.
No. Did you see Spectre?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Spectre's wait. You're right. Sorry, I forgot about Spectre. Spectre is awful. Good lord, that's
Spectre's
awful.
Incoherent.
It's like an exhibit A in how to not retcon things.
I mean, Finding Neverland is fine. Stranger Than Fiction with Will Ferrell is just weird.
Hey, Stranger Than Fiction is very underappreciated.
I will say, like, I don't know. Well, the one film that I might give him credit for is World War Z. But I don't know who's to give credit for.
I don't know
who to give credit for on that. Because there is, what, 3 months of... they completely reshot the third act of that movie. And so, like, do I give credit to Damon Lindelof for coming in and rewriting it? Does Mark Forster still get credit?
That's my motto.
You say that sarcastically, but I take that seriously.
I actually like him, Lindelof. The hate is too far. Anyway, I will say, Mark Forster's kind of generally accepted best movie is Finding Neverland. That's basically what this is.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I just, like, it's, I mean, it's what you were saying, Jake. Jake, when you texted us during the movie, you said, all of these trailers are either Disney sequels, prequels, or remakes. And...
yep.
And they're gonna net several $100 million in this movie probably. So more power to them.
Wait, because there is still Dumbo coming out. There is still Mulan. There is still Lion King. There's a Peter Pan film. There is literally, name a Disney animated film, and they are remaking it live action.
Okay, I have a hot take.
Okay.
CGI is the worst thing that ever happened to film.
That's a pretty hot take. I would.
That's a pretty hot.
I would agree in the way that I know you're over exaggerating. So, yes, but also very much no.
I mean, clearly I'm exaggerating. The problem is that it makes a lot of things too easy, and it makes things that should have been prohibitive not anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, I think.
But I mean, we also get things like Guardians of the Galaxy, which is basically shot on a soundstage and is a ton of fun.
Right, like half the Marvel movies, the new Star Wars films are all soundstage films, and they're great. I love them. But I'm trying to think of films like... I think a more, maybe... Oh, now we're getting into a whole different territory that we don't need to get into of what's actually... As much as I love... I think Iron Man is a fantastic film. Iron Man may be one of the worst things to happen to the film industry in the past 20 years.
Yeah, that's also true.
Yeah.
But
on as this, great as it is.
On this topic of Winnie the Pooh, guys, I just saw this. We'll tweet this. I just found this little like meme. It's Ewan McGregor turning around. He's like, "Hello there, Pooh." And it's Pooh going, "General Kenobi." And then six lightsabers come out.
What's going on with that film? That's more of what I'm curious about. Ewan McGregor, why are you not doing that film like right now?
He said he's down. That's more of a Lucasfilm thing.
I will say that Ewan McGregor being Christopher Robin gives me much more hope than I would have otherwise.
Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think what gives me the most hope is the fact that Brad Garrett's playing Eeyore. You know, that's that's the real quality there. And that's perfect. That's very inspired casting. Disney, you have like six different live action films in the making, and here's the thing, I'll see all of them, so I'm not one to complain.
Man, I don't know if I will. I was all in on them, but Beauty and the Beast is almost unwatchable.
I don't get how you like, what about it is unwatchable?
It's just like it's 40 minutes longer than the original, and it's excruciating and it's garish, and the Beast looks weird. Everyone is taking themselves way too seriously, except for Luke Evans as Gaston. I just didn't like it at all. And I love the original. The original is one of the great animated films of all time.
I think that's like the problem is with these remakes is they're remaking them in a way of like a 2 hour 15, 2 hour 30, like epic fairy tale fantasy thing, but then it's also Disney-fied, so they like can't fully lean into like the drama or the seriousness that like the aesthetic and the style would call for with what they're trying to do with these top-notch actors and stuff. Like, they're losing the magic of the animated film, of it being like a fun hour 30, good songs, basic story, bright colors, and like animation. I'm with you, Trevor. Like, animation, especially old style animation, has a very unique tone and aesthetic that is really hard to recreate with CGI or live action, especially when you kind of miss the heart behind the animated film.
That's the best possible segue into our review about A Wrinkle in Time.
I will give you guys the fact that Beauty and the Beast is not a great film, but it's good, maybe adequate. But Cinderella is a delight from beginning to end.
I haven't seen Cinderella. I know that people really like it, and I like what's her name, Lily James.
Lily James,
she's great. So I'd be willing to watch that. But Beauty and the Beast,
Kate
is a big disappointment.
Let's go ahead and get to honorable mentions, though, because we have a new segment. That we are not a new segment, but we have a new class to induct for honorable mentions. We are very deep into this. We have so many people that have been into this category that we've already nominated and already inducted. And what it means to be an honorable mention is that if I knew nothing else about a film other than this person was going to be involved with the project, that would be enough to put me in the theater. So if all I knew about a movie was Steven Spielberg is directing. Is that enough to make me want to go see a movie? If all I knew about a movie was that Emma Stone is acting in the movie, is that enough to make me want to go see the movie? Are they that caliber of talent to where if all I knew was that they were involved, is that enough to make me want to go see it? We've inducted a lot of people over the time that we've done this. And part of it is that, you know, we must have a unanimous vote. All three of us must agree that we would go see a film for this person solely based on them being in the film and nothing else. And they must have worked in, been in something to the effect of 5 films over the course of their career so far. So people like, as talented as Ryan Coogler is, Ryan Coogler has only directed 3 projects. He's only done Fruitvale, Creed, and Black Panther. And so as much as we would love for him to be in that category, he's just not, because he hasn't directed as much yet. And that's fine, because he will be after 2 films. But we're going to go ahead and get into the newest class. We always nominate 3 different people. Each one of us gets a nomination. And so let's go ahead and start with Trevor's nomination for honorable mentions.
All right. This one probably isn't very interesting. It's someone that we've talked about at length, especially recently. And it is Alex Garland.
Ooh.
Ooh. Okay. Whoa. Is he done? Well, yeah, he's done more than 5 because he's been a writer and director.
Yeah, he wrote Dread. He wrote Never Let Me Go. He wrote 28 Days Later.
Wow. I'm going to say yes. I didn't know he was a writer on all of those things. And looking at all of those things, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. Dread is incredible. Apparently, Carl Urban came out this past week saying that he essentially was the director and saved the film. Batman Black and White is awesome. Sunshine. I didn't know he wrote Sunshine. We love Sunshine.
Oh, yeah.
28 Days Later, one of the scariest zombie movies of all time. Ex Machina, amazing. Annihilation, my top film of the year so far. I mean, he's the best voice in sci-fi right now. Best up-and-coming voice in sci-fi, I should say. But yeah, I mean, I'm all in on Alex Garland.
Yeah, that's an easy yes for me as well. Dread's amazing. And I remember at first when I saw Dread, I was like, man, this feels like a Raid ripoff, like an Americanized version of the Raid. But it's actually very different. And I think what's done, even story-wise and writing-wise with it, is very unique. And that's obviously Garland's choice from what we've learned recently. Ex Machina is great. I've talked at length about my love for Sunshine. We talked about it last week. So yeah, I'm in. Alex Garland, welcome to the honorable mentions. Jake, who is your nomination for honorable mench?
Yeah, this is somebody who, when I first saw them on screen, I was like, pretty face, maybe some potential, but that's about it. But over the past few years, this person has consistently proved me wrong, and is, I think, one of the best actors in Hollywood right now, one of the most consistent, and I think the best and most versatile of the Hollywood Chrises. He is also the
gosh
only
darn it, Jake, you're
good
kidding
part
me
of A Wrinkle
wait,
in Time.
Wait,
and that is
I
Chris
was
going to
nominate him, and then I changed my mind at the last second.
I was going to nominate Chris Pine. Well, you stinker.
Yes.
Congratulations.
Yes.
You played
Chris
yourself.
The obvious answer is that Chris Pine is the best Chris. Yes.
So, I mean, it's not even close.
Yeah.
So I had never even heard of Chris Pine until I saw Star Trek in 2009, and I was like blown away. I was like, who is this guy? He's the coolest dude of all time.
Yeah.
He just like, he's so perfect as Kirk. He's so great in Wonder Woman. He's the best part of A Wrinkle in Time, probably.
Mm-hmm.
Like you just said. Chris Pine is awesome. I'm 100% in on him.
Yeah, I'm 100% in as well. I'm obviously angry because now I you stole my nomination. But yes, Chris Pine is quickly becoming I think the best actor, one of my favorite actors in Hollywood. He's somebody who you can almost bank on to be the talent that you need in any film. And if he's on screen, he is delivering probably one of the best scenes in that movie, because as we'll talk soon, he's amazing. He's so talented that I don't know what else to say other than yes, of course.
Oh, and Hell or High Water. I knew there was something I couldn't think of.
Yeah. I mean, he had last year, he had Hell or High Water and Wonder Woman. I mean,
and Star Trek Beyond.
Yeah. Well, that was last 2 years. But yeah, I mean, he's had.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He's had a good run for sure.
So my nominee is somebody who is an animated film director. He's incredibly talented. He's somebody who, when I watch his animated films, he is constantly pushing the envelope of what you can do with an animated film. And I don't even mean that like visually, but he does it story-wise as well. His most recent animated film is one of the best animated films of all time in a lot of people's opinions. We talked about it a lot on our Pixar podcast. But my nomination for honorable mentions is Pete Docter, the director of Monsters, Inc., Up and Inside Out, and he's worked on a ton of other things with Pixar.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of the original brain trusts of Pixar, and
yep.
I mean, he's amazing. Yeah, Pete Docter, for sure, and for me.
So these are the last three movies he has a writing credit on. Inside Out, Up, and Wall-E.
Yeah.
Which I think Inside Out and Up are the two best Pixar films, probably. The Toy Story franchise, somewhere close to there, if you want to count it all as one, that kind of thing. But yeah, Pete Docter is great. Fantastic. Yes.
So Pete Docter. That is our 11th class of honorable mentions. We have Alex Garland, writer, director. For works such as Annihilation, Ex Machina, and Dread. With Chris Pine, the amazingly talented actor who is the best Chris in Hollywood recently of Wonder Woman and of the film we're reviewing tonight, A Wrinkle in Time. And Pete Docter, the director and writer of, as far as story goes, of Monsters, Inc., Up, and Inside Out, and a number of other Pixar films as well where he helped out with the story department. So, welcome, 11th class of honorable mentions. We will be back sometime shortly for our 12th class. But let's go ahead and get into our review of our weekly film, A Wrinkle in Time, directed by Ava DuVernay. Let's jump into our general thoughts. So first of all, do you guys have any experience really quickly with the book at all? Did you guys read the book?
I read it in like fourth grade, but I don't remember anything about it.
Okay, Trevor?
Yeah, I read it in elementary school. I read it again probably 4 or 5 years ago just for fun. It's a quick little fun read. And I like it. I've also read some other stuff by Madeline L'Engle. She's really interesting and thoughtful, and I was really looking forward to this film because of my previous experience with this story.
Yeah, I read the book, I think back when I was in fifth grade. I think I did like a book report on it or something. I've also seen the 2003 Disney TV film, which is horrible.
By Madeline L'Engle about it. Have you seen it? She said, "I have seen it. I expected it to be bad, and it was."
And that's about as accurate as I have of a review as I can give for that movie. But let's go ahead, hop into our general thoughts. Trevor, what was your general thoughts for A Wrinkle in Time?
So when Jake a few minutes ago was talking about the Disneyfication of things, that sometimes can be good and it sometimes can be bad. There's nothing about this movie that's bad, but there's also nothing really that's too good about it either. It's just very thin and bland. It takes a lot of the deepness and the thoughtfulness and the kind of universe world building out of the original and just kind of pushes you along this sort of thin story that takes too long to get going anywhere. I don't think it's a bad movie. I think it's a perfectly good above average kids movie. I think it has some nice themes that are positive and life giving, but it also is not nearly what it could have been or should have been, I would say.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I read this book in fourth grade. I literally don't remember anything about it. So I don't really care that this is based on a book. And I generally don't care about that at all with movies. It's either a good movie or it isn't. Like, it to me, it doesn't matter if something is based on a book. Also, I understand that this is a kid's movie, and with that, I'm willing to be less critical than I am with most films. What's weird, though, is how much this feels like a children's movie. Like, it feels like that a lot more than most Disney films. I'm definitely not the intended audience for this movie. I hated it. Like, I almost walked out in realization that this was going to be a waste of my time. Like, that's not to say that the movie doesn't achieve its goal. And I think this is a good kids movie with a great message that kids should hear. But, like, I'm not a kid. And I think that's my biggest complaint about this movie is there really isn't much here for the adult in the audience like there is with most Disney films. Like, even with something as core to the modern childhood experience as Frozen is, like, I can still watch Frozen and be fairly entertained for the full runtime. We did it with Moana, like, 3 times over Christmas with my niece. And, like, this just didn't have that. Maybe it was the child actors. Maybe it was the bad script. And my goodness, this script is bad. I'm not sure what it was exactly, but, like, this did not work for
me. Every time there was a long pause in dialogue, I guessed the next word.
Yeah. And, like, what's weird, though, is I don't think this even works for most kids. Because, like, walking out, I heard a little girl say to her mom, "Well, I was not impressed."
So, yeah, like
I was like, just, yeah, girl, me too.
It doesn't have anything. It's the story deserved a better movie than this.
Yeah.
That's my main takeaway.
Yeah, so Jake, I agree with you. Normally I try not to bring any experience with past source material or anything into a movie and just judge it. But when the source material is a very good source material and you kind of strip it away from what that is, that's going to be very frustrating. The core elements are still there, but there's a lot of things that really frustrated me. The way this film was shot in, like, constant close-up with constant shallow depth of field gave me a headache. I constantly was just waiting for them to be like, just go a little wider. Just go a little wider. Give us perspective of what you're seeing. And I feel like it never, like, whoever shot this is like a portrait photographer who only uses like a 51.2 lens and doesn't like is like, look, I only shoot shallow depth of field. That's it. And like, there's so much more to be seen. And yes, there are scenes without that, but no joke. I'm not kidding. I think 50% of the movie is close up shallow depth of field shots.
Yeah. And that was anytime they showed a landscape shot, I was like squinting. I was like, what else is out there? What else? Yeah. What else is there to see?
And my biggest frustration is I love any film that presents a new world with new mythos, new rules, and has us like take a journey within that. But this film straight up just starts going and doesn't give us any of the rules, any context, doesn't explain anything. It's like, oh, you test her from one place to the next. And it's for a film where the parents are both scientists trying to discover something. That feels very much like a cop-out. It feels very much like, here's a word of something that you can do. You can access it with your mind. And that makes it seem like
trust
I could
the adults
sit here.
Say.
Yes. It's- and that's kind of just, it feels cheap and like a cop-out. There's some parts of this that I really like. I actually think that the movie has an incredible cast from Charles Wallace, who is played by, what's the kid's name? Where'd it go? I had it right here. Derek McCabe to Storm Reid. I think Chris Pine, we talked about, has one of the most... Chris Pine is just fantastic. Let's just say that. But
he's way too good in this.
Yes, he's incredible.
He's like
also,
so good.
Where can I shop the Chris Pine astrophysicist collection? Is that like at Dillard's or something?
I have the same watch as him. I got it from Target for $20.
Okay.
His cardigans I'm down for.
Oh yeah.
And the cardigan vests. I think Oprah, Reese Witherspoon, and Mindy Kaling are fine. Mm-hmm. I think Zach Galifianakis and the kid who plays Calvin are incredibly miscast. And that's coming from somebody who loves Zach Galifianakis.
Yeah. I mean, Galifianakis was almost like he wasn't sure if he was allowed to be funny. While he was acting.
Right.
Yeah. He was also fine. Calvin was rough.
Calvin was bad. And Calvin was bad, especially when you put him against Storm Reid and Derek McCabe as Charles Wallace and Meg. I think those two actors were incredible, especially for kid actors. Charles Wallace kind of maybe gets a little hokey towards the end when he, well, towards the end of the movie. But I think Storm Reid and Derek McCabe do a fantastic job as kid actors for 90% of the film.
With Calvin, though, it's more the script than him. Like, his lines are terrible. This script is abysmal. The story makes no sense. Like, I understand it's based on a book that I don't remember, but what happens here story-wise literally makes no sense. Like, they don't explain anything.
This is the rare film that I feel like would benefit from 10 extra minutes.
Well, what's weird is they have Reese Witherspoon explaining all of this stuff in the trailer, and then they cut it out.
Yeah, it's in this bizarre middle ground where it doesn't stay very true to the themes of the original story, but also doesn't make as much sense if you haven't read the original story.
Yeah.
Which is bad. That's a bad place to be.
Yeah. No, I agree. So I want to get into spoilers because this, like we said, this film kind of just jumps into things and doesn't really have a ramp up. It just kind of starts going. But I don't know. Like, look, this book has been out. This book came out in 1962. So if you've read the book, fine. Like, keep listening. If you haven't read the book or you haven't seen the movie or are interested still in the movie from our general thoughts, then go see the movie. I think there are better films out there right now. I think you could go see Black Panther.
Go see Annihilation. Go see it every day.
Depending, like, I think if you're looking for a kidly film, you could go see Black Panther and film and be still get like a kids-esque film. Whereas I'm not going to take my son to go see Annihilation.
Yeah, fair enough.
I'm just not.
Fair enough.
But I think you could go see Black Panther and get a lot of the same themes and with a better story and acting and a more interesting visual sense to the movie. But so let's go ahead and talk about the movie as a whole. Spoilers. So, you know, don't listen if you haven't seen the movie or haven't read the book. My biggest complaint about this film is that they don't explain anything. Like, was that something that, like, you guys were constantly waiting for them to be like, here is how you test her? And I'm not somebody who's, like, spoon-fed me things. But at the same time, and I said this with Annihilation, like, you at least need to give me the utensils to eat the meal. And I feel like this film just kind of is like, here's something, let's go. And then just runs off and you're left standing there as they're running away.
Yeah, Cam, you just have to find the right frequency.
I'm sorry. I guess my frequency for love just wasn't fine.
I don't know if that means you have to, like, implant a radio into your head or if you have to, like, be able to hum a tune at that frequency. I don't know what that means, but that's what they keep saying.
Also, the fact that, like, they say, like, the frequency of love is the key. I am all for love. And I'll talk about this in a second in the importance of the themes that this movie reveals. It feels like such a cop-out, and it feels so artificial to be like, the frequency was the frequency of love. That's how you test her. It just feels like such a, like hitting you over the head with it, of, like, love is the key, instead of just, like, letting Chris Pine's amazing acting when he sees his daughter portray that for itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's just so many things here that are just like, who are the misses? What is happening? Why does this little five-year-old know all these people and, like, know who these people are? And why did he turn all of a sudden? Like, Charles Wallace is set up to be, like, the ultimate kid, and then it's just like drop of a hat. Actually, no, the It has shown me my potential, so now I'm even
Michael Pena.
Something, yeah, for real. In a suit of armor that looks like a suit? Question mark?
What?
So in the book, it's a little more clear, at least as far as I remember, that Charles Wallace is doing that so that they can find, so that he can get access to the It.
Yes.
That's made a lot more clear. as I was watching this, I was like, well, this is strange. Shouldn't everyone kind of know the plan or something here if we're going to do this thing?
Yeah. It was rough.
And the transition there into the kind of strange place where they're in the weird neighborhood with the repeating bouncing ball and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
The way that the book shows that is it like being like a real town in a real place, but it's all like automated and everything. It's supposed to be like a kind of a critique of like a totalitarian government setup. But you're made to believe when it transitions there to the white room that they're in like a simulation when they're on this planet. That's what, at least what I took out of it. But that's not what's happening at all in the book. Which, well, I know I'm not here to compare everything, but it like is completely different in how it affects the story.
No, I don't think that you should. Trevor, you're right. We're not here to compare, but at the same time, it's like when you have a great book and you strip down a lot of the good parts from that book, it's going to be a commentary because the movie doesn't stand on its own, but the book does. And so what's the difference is the parts that are good from the book were stripped out. And one of those is like, I feel like in the movie, and I don't remember this being so prevalent in the book, is this like talking down of who Meg is or of her character or quality of like, she's not like, I don't know about this one. She doesn't seem like she has it. And I don't remember there being so much like negativity towards Meg in the book. I remember there being a lot of positivity towards Charles Wallace, but like, I feel like you really strip down that character to the point where it's like, why are we as an audience then rooting for her if these like extraterrestrial beings don't believe in her? Like, why should we as an audience then believe in her? And then out of nowhere, it's like, she's meant to save the day.
Yeah, that just feels like typical Disney, you know, like,
but even in Disney,
unlikable hero or unpredictable hero. Oh, we all have a hero with love. Like that's every Disney movie.
And right, but Disney masks that a lot better than this film does normally.
Oh, for sure.
And her shortcomings are what fuel her power, or something.
I never got that. Like I was like,
I didn't understand the connection. Like, remember your faults. And then she did. And then she remembered. She figured out.
Is one of her faults that she loves her brother?
Once she remembered her faults, then she could like either like create or see the staircase that wasn't there and find her dad and just stroll right into his cell where he was being held.
So like her faults are that she's perceptive and analytical, unlike a good woman.
Yeah, I don't know about that. So one of the big things with the book is that Madeline Lee, oh gosh,
I'm keeping that in.
Yeah, no, that's fine. One of the things with the book is that Madeline Lee Engel was a known Christian, and there are very prevalent Christian themes in the book. Was that something that you guys felt like was taken out of the movie? Or I guess I'll say that, like, I feel like the Christian themes of the light versus the darkness and of the power of love are still very prevalent. The, like, Mrs. Who quoting scripture at certain parts, like, in the book isn't in the movie. But the themes, I think, are there of the power of love, but I don't think that they're as...
That's the power of love.
Yes. Let's quote Huey Lewis.
That's right. In the words of Huey Lewis, that's all you needed to know. Maybe he should have been like Mr. How. Mr. What's it? Mr. Witch. So
that'd be amazing.
So
this
the
movie
thing
would
is
be so much Huey better.
with sparkly eyebrows still.
Yes.
Jeff Goldblum style.
So the thing, So the thing is, I finally saw Thor, by the way. That's a topic for another day. I understand why they take out the overtly Christian themes. I get it. I get what they're trying to do. I'll say you don't have to escape them completely. You can make some films with some similar Christian themes without feeling like they're Christian films, like The Book of Eli. Or The Dark Knight.
God's not dead.
I mean, three.
Fireproof.
Oh my gosh. No, those are bad. Those are very bad.
But no, Trevor, I agree. There are plenty of films in the last year. Like, I think War for the Planet of the Apes has some very biblical themes in it that it's not like overtly in your face about it. Like, so I think that's definitely.
Yeah,
possible.
I think this was like over Disney-fied. They like scrubbed every semblance of a soul from this thing. And it just became about this black blob that is attacking us for reasons. And we have to stop it by getting inside of it, remembering that we suck sometimes and loving.
It's a good theme, but it was out of place. The whole like your faults are where the light comes in. Because like from a Christian perspective, that's very true. Like your faults are where like Christ's blood is over our sins. And like that's 100% like great theme. I'm all on board with that. But they don't really do anything with that. It's like, your faults are where the light comes in. But then she's like, oh, my faults, love. And then it's like, no, love isn't one of your faults. Like, I don't know where that came from.
So here's what I think happened. I think Ava DuVernay wanted to make a film version of A Wrinkle in Time because she likes the book. She also was afraid this might be her only kids movie and wanted to make a movie about having a positive self-image and embracing who you are. So she put those things together and made that film.
Which are all great things that I fully support, but just doesn't, in the context of this film, they don't fit together.
I will say, I think this movie does do a really good job of like speaking to young black women about like who you are and be confident in who you are. Like also biracial, like, like, be confident in who you are. Like, I know that I feel weird saying this as like a white guy. But like, I know that the issue of black women's hair is like a very controversial thing and like thing that, they struggle with. And like in this film, it's constantly edified and you know, that stuff's all great. And like the Christian stuff, that doesn't bother me too much because like the whole message of Christianity boiled down is love. And so like most films that have some sort of sacrificial element can be construed into a Christian symbolism or something. Like Christianity is a very broad message with a lot of very broad symbols and themes. But I mean, I think this film has a lot of great messages. I'm just bummed that it's a bad film. Like that's what it boils down to for me is like, it just seems like a huge misstep for Ava DuVernay. Like this just did not feel like her at all. Like, especially with the success that she's had with her, like such unique films that she's done. This just felt really weird and like a weird misstep. Once again, I am not the audience for this film. Like, so take that with a grain of salt. If you love this kind of stuff, or I mean, I don't really know what to compare it to, but like give it a try. But like, this just was not for me. So yeah,
it's kind of like the best possible version of like Never Ending Story.
With even a flying being that they all ride on.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. There you go. Leaf
Jake, I think
monster.
I think that you're right in that, like, I don't know if I can not recommend this to people. It's one of those things where it's like, look, it wasn't for me. There is a positive message that's very important. And I don't want anything that we say about the quality of the film to take away. There are times where I'm like, look, that film's bad and you shouldn't like it. But then there are times where it's like, I didn't like this film, but if somebody does like this film, I don't want to take away anything from that because there are some like very important themes that this film gets into. And like Jake, what you talked about like positive body image for young girls, like all of that, I'm 100% on board with. And if somebody comes out of it and they're like, as a kid, like I took away this positive message about who I am, I'm like, look, that's a success. And that is something that we should be very happy about as audience members, that we at least like that film was at least put out there. And so like, As much as I didn't like this film, at the same time, I think there is at least good that can come out of this film having been made.
Yeah.
I agree.
Jake, did you, I mean, I say Jake because Jake is the person that is an active filmmaker. Was the cinematography annoying or bothersome to you?
It didn't stick out to me as good. Like, I didn't leave thinking like, man, the cinematography was fantastic. There were definitely some good shots. But I think that just more speaks to the content of the film. It's a kid's movie. And so, I mean, you're going to be close up on the actors' faces. That's another thing that felt weird about this film to me is like, you shoot this as a film, which includes a lot of close-ups and stuff. But it felt like everyone was performing for the stage. Like everything was so over the top. So in your face. I will say like the art direction, costume design and production design were pretty great. And there is some like okay CGI in this, like, but yeah, I mean, I wasn't super impressed. But
there's also some very bad CGI.
Oh, for sure.
Like the leaf flying thing that Reese Witherspoon turns into.
Yeah, that
was almost like, yeah, it was, because what's, I think in the book she transforms into like a centaur.
Yeah, that's what the being. All the Mrs. W's are all, they're all like, it's like a centaur with wings kind of. And that's like, and the flowers kind of took the place of those creatures, the role that they play. But yeah, it's not quite as abstract, I guess. That whole scene was very weird because I thought they were like getting on her back to fly somewhere and they didn't actually go anywhere. They just went to get a closer look. And then they came back and they said goodbye to the other two and they came back and they were still there.
It felt like false action in that like Disney was like, we need something to kind of like pick up the pace a little bit right here. And then it's like, well, what if Calvin fell off of this winged creature? And then we have this like action scene of like what that looks like.
This kind of makes me think. This is a movie about going on a trip and a journey and finding someone, and it only has like two stops.
I don't want to call Ava DuVernay into question because, well, so part of it is like, I'm curious how much studio influence there is in this film, because Jake, you hit on this, but like, this doesn't feel like an Ava DuVernay film. Like, the past two films she's put out are Selma, which is incredible, and 13th, which is a documentary, and while it's not a narrative-based story, it's still an incredible piece of filmmaking. And so I'm just kind of like, I was sitting there like, how much of this is actually Ava's film and how much of this was studio interference?
Yeah, I mean, this felt like Disney could have handed it to any director and it would have felt a lot like this. Like, I don't see her fingers on this at all, which is sad because she's amazing. And like, I hope that the low box office performance and low critical reception won't hinder her relationship with Disney. Cause like when people complain about Star Wars not having fresh voices and stuff, like Ava DuVernay is like a great example of someone who in the future could get like an awesome dramatic Star Wars film made. But like,
yes,
this, I don't know if this was Disney not trusting her or her like not standing up for her creative vision, or I don't know what this is. I'm just speculating. But this just didn't feel like her. And I think it's going to hurt her career. Like Selma was fantastic and 13th is great, but neither of those are like juggernauts in terms of box office. And I don't know. Who knows?
Go ahead, Cam. I was going to kind of switch to something else.
If you had told me like, hey, Ava DuVernay is going to direct Star Wars Episode 9, I'd be like, great. I'm all on board with that. She understands character development. She understands how to tell a story. She understands pacing. She understands female characters, which is important with the Star Wars films that we have now, with, you know, Rey being where she is and her kind of being that. I would be like, Ava DuVernay, you are a great filmmaker. And I still believe that she is. I really hope this doesn't hurt her. And I don't think it will. I don't think anybody's going to hand her $100 million movie for her next film. But I think Ava DuVernay comes back with a smaller film that is on the caliber of Selma or 13th, and people are like, I think if we look back on A Wrinkle in Time 5 years from now, we'll go like, that was a blip on her career that wasn't as bright as all the other points in her career.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think one of the big things to me that shows that the studio had a lot of influence was the inclusion of several pop songs in this movie that just appear over action. At one point, there's a character giving a voiceover and there's a pop song playing that has lyrics and you can't understand what the character is saying. And like that, something that would have made this movie significantly better was if those songs had not appeared whatsoever.
Yeah, those were like when those songs started playing, that was like, well, I got to pee, so this seems like a pretty good time to like, go do this.
That's where I was like, why did they spend so much money on this Disney Channel original movie?
Yeah. Those scenes is where, okay, so I'll phrase it this way. I love The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. I think that film is a good film. I think the films after that in The Chronicles of Narnia have been very
bad.
Disney Channel film-esque.
They're bad.
When that music started playing, it felt like the bad moments in those other two Chronicles of Narnia films. Like with like bad CGI, kind of bland characters, and a missing potential of what this could have been. It's just like, I don't know. It's frustrating because the source material is great. There's great actors in there. There's a fantastic director directing this, and somehow it just didn't all come together. I think a lot of it's the script. I really do. And it's frustrating because all of these people, if you were to tell me, hey, there is a Wrinkle in Time movie, like if we had seen nothing from this and you had just told me the basics of it, I'd be like, that sounds amazing. I fully am hyped for that movie. And it just didn't. It didn't live up to the caliber of the talent that I would expect from any of these people.
Yep.
So, do you guys have any final thoughts for this movie?
No, I mean, that basically sums it up. Like, it's not for me. I thought it was bad for a lot of reasons, but that doesn't mean that you, the listener, will think it's bad. So, give it a try, but also don't get your hopes up. So,
yeah, if this is a film that you're like, hey, I am interested in the story or the trailers look good, go see it. Really do go see it. Or if you have little kids and you just want to take them to a movie, maybe they'll very much like it. Let's go ahead and get to our ratings for A Wrinkle in Time. Trevor, what is your rating for A Wrinkle in Time?
I'm going to give this a Mrs. Y and a Mrs. Howe out of Mrs. W's.
Okay.
As in, like, why is this like this and how did it happen?
Amazing. Trevor, there are sometimes, have you ever seen the Kristen Wiig movie reviews on SNL?
No, I don't think so. Maybe I have.
She rates her movies with like facial expressions and phrases. So she's like, I gave this movie a huh? And a yeah. And there are times where like in that moment right now when you just said that, I very much thought of Kristen Wiig on SNL.
Why, thank you.
Job well done.
So yeah, that comes out to like a D+. It's a watchable movie. It's a little bit incoherent. It has some nice, pleasant themes. There's nothing awful about this, but it's just not very good.
Yeah. Jake.
I mean, look, this is a kid's movie. Like, a kid's movie for kids to watch. Not, this is like the Even Stevens movie. No adult's going to enjoy this. Like, but kids are going to love it. So, like, as an adult who watched this, I would give this like a D. Like, script is terrible. It makes no sense. Like, garbage. But if you're a kid or if you have kids, like, they're probably really going to enjoy the 2 hours that this movie brings. And it might give you some rest as a parent. So take that with a grain of salt. I hated it, but your kids might not.
Well, that is a ringing endorsement if I've ever heard one.
Well, it's how I feel.
Is that your review for every DreamWorks and Illumination movie?
No, dude. Like How to Train Your Dragon is like amazing. Like Despicable Me 1, fantastic. Like
I was
Frozen,
thinking more of like
Moana,
the
great.
The Over the Hedge, Flushed Away category.
Oh, see, yeah, that's a different category of DreamWorks and Illumination. Those can go die. So,
did you guys see the So Sterling K. Brown hosted SNL this weekend, and there's a skit in there where Beck Bennett and I think A.D. Bryant are parents, and they're meeting their daughter's new fiance for the first time, which is Sterling K. Brown, and they talk about, oh, we just rented this new movie, Coco. It's fantastic. It's one of the best animated films of all time. And then Sterling K. Brown goes off on why he thinks Shrek is the greatest animated film of all time. And it's great. It's great.
That's fantastic.
He
went to my high school, Sterling K. Brown.
Did he really?
I found that out like a month ago. Fun fact.
That guy is insanely talented.
So hot right now.
I'm going to just kind of echo what you guys have said. For me, it's a C. And I feel like the acting performances and like the good message save it. It really gave me a headache. And multiple times I was just kind of like, why? I took my dad to go see this. It was the first movie my dad and I have seen together in a long time. We used to go see movies together all the time. And he was
a bummer
in town. And we went to go see it. And I really was like, I'm really sorry. This is the film I took you to go see. Because the past two films we've seen are fantastic. And I feel like the row ahead that we have of films is fantastic as well. And this is the one kind of dip in that schedule of great films. So, Dad, if you're listening, I'm sorry. But I had fun hanging out with you.
Dang.
That's the perfect review. Dad, I'm sorry.
Let's go ahead and get to our content of the week, though. Trevor, what is your content of the week?
I can never make these jokes with a straight face. I can't do deadpan. I was going to do a joke about Nausicaa of the Valley of the Wind. I had trouble. I was kind of trying to recommend something that was along these lines. And I kind of had trouble coming up with something. This reminded me so much of those like 90s mediocre fantasy movies for kids, like The Pagemaster and Neverending Story.
The Pagemaster is amazing.
That film has not been mentioned on a podcast ever in the history of podcasts.
If you haven't seen Pagemaster, you should see it because it is something else.
The movie is
awesome. It is just something else. So I guess that's my recommendation. I'm kind of in between a lot of things as far as pop culture recommendations. My one thing I will recommend is a podcast called Good Christian Fun. Yeah. If you happen to grow up in Protestant or evangelical Christian culture in the 1990s and 2000s, this may resonate with you on a pretty big level. It takes a deep dive, kind of an a-religious dive into different parts of Christian popular culture, and gets into how ridiculous and counterproductive some of them are. So check out that podcast, Good Christian Fun. It's by one of the guys who does Gilmore Guys. So if you may be familiar with that.
Gilmore Guys.
Yeah.
That's a thing?
Yeah, it's two guys. They moved on to Marvelous Miss Maisel, but they would watch an episode of Gilmore Girls and do a review episode. They did the entire show.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Oh, I want to watch that.
It's a podcast. It's a podcast.
Well, yeah, sorry. Listen, I want to listen to that.
But yeah. I watched the first episode of Marvelous Miss Maisel. I will report back soon.
Good. Okay. As someone who works for a church, listening to Good Christian Fun makes me take a hard look in the mirror a lot. or just like look at where I work and I'm just like, my goodness,
It's definitely not only for Christians.
Oh no.
Or people who have experience with Christianity. There is a lot of, you know, curse words and quote unquote inappropriate jokes. So don't be scared away. It's a good listen.
Yeah, it's really funny and really entertaining and good. Good recommend, Trevor. My content of the week is just some great
kids' movies that you as an adult can enjoy watching along with your children. That will be basically anything by Pixar. And then I would also recommend like the latest run of Disney animated films, Moana, Big Hero 6, Frozen. I mean, those are all good, enjoyable films as an adult. Zootopia. I mean, check those out. Those are fantastic. And you and your kid can enjoy them together.
My son is 15 months old now, and I feel like if it's possible for him to have a favorite film, it's Big Hero 6. It's the first film that he ever sat down for 10 minutes to watch a little bit of. I mean, he's normally the kid that's like constantly running around, but he actually sat down for a while and watched that. So,
that's awesome.
100% on board with that. My content of the week is, we talked about it a little bit. If you haven't seen Ava DuVernay's Selma, it's a fantastic piece of filmmaking that deserves to be seen by everybody. I feel like it's more important now than ever to go see that film and to kind of remember the works of Martin Luther King Jr. And it really showcases the talent of who Ava DuVernay is. And I feel like if you see that and then see this, you'll kind of understand more of our review of this film.
Also 13th.
And then the other thing... Yes, 13th as well. The other thing that I'm going to recommend is The Last Jedi, Star Wars The Last Jedi's novelization, which is the book that is, I think it's canon, but it is the official novel of the movie. And let me explain myself a little bit. Normally, if you were to tell me to read a book that's the official novelization of a movie, I would say, why? I'll just see the movie instead. But there are things that the book adds, and I've been trying to find if it's canon or not. If this is canon, it's actually some really important things to the Star Wars universe.
I think those have traditionally been accepted as canon, as far as I understand.
Yeah, so there's some very interesting things that kind of explain motivations, explain what people were thinking at certain things, at certain times in the movie, or like the book opens with Luke having a dream on Ahch-To of what his life would have been like if he had never left Tatooine. Like, what would he be doing? Who would he be married to? What would his job be? Who would he have kids? Like, it kind of is like his dream of like what his life would have been if he had never left. What the world would have been like, what the galaxy would have been like if he had never left. And then it opens up, and then it's him walking up to the bridge or to the top of the mountain on Ahch-To where Rey comes to meet him. That's the start of the book. And I'm 3/4 of the way through right now, and it's just kind of fascinating to actually like read the behind, like the thoughts and minds of people with that movie, which is a fantastic movie and comes out on digital tomorrow and is out in DVD and Blu-ray and for rental on March 27th, tomorrow being March 3rd, I should say. That's all we have for tonight. If you've enjoyed listening to us, go to iTunes, rate us, review us, leave us some thoughts on the podcast. And ultimately, if you've enjoyed listening to us, recommend us to a friend, share us on social media. That would be the best and most honorable thing for us to receive. We have plenty of different forms of social media for you to interact with us on, whether that's you want to get in touch with us on Twitter or Facebook. You can find us at Popcorn Optional on both those. We have a website, popcornoptional.com, where you can find all of our episodes. You can read more about who we are and get in contact with us also through email through there. But if you've enjoyed listening to us, like I said, recommend us to a friend or share about our podcast on social media. My name is Cameron Salina. You can find me online at 321CammyTime. Jake, where can we find you online?
Find me at jakebrown.tv. That's my website and my Instagram handle. Trevor, what about you?
I'm on Twitter and Instagram at TurboTrevor.
That's all we have for tonight. We'll be back next week with a new review, new subjects, new segments, all sorts of new stuff. So make sure to subscribe and tune in to hear what we're talking about next week. To quote the great Michael Scott, we'll be back ASAP as possible.
Bye.
Later.